So I'll invite you to turn to Luke chapter 6, verses 1 through 12 in the Pew Bible. It is page 894. Okay. Luke chapter 6, verses 1 through 12. One Sabbath, while Jesus was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked some heads of grain, rubbed them in their hands, and ate them. But some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered, "Have you not read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priests to eat, and gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath.' On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and taught, and there was a man there whose right hand was withered. The scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would cure on the Sabbath, so that they might find an accusation against him. Even though he knew what they were thinking, he said to the man who had the withered hand, 'Come and stand here.' He got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, 'I ask you, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save a life or to destroy it?' After looking around at all of them, he said to him, 'Stretch out your hand.' He did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. Now, during those days, he went out to the mountain to pray, and he spent the night in prayer to God." We sang a few moments ago, and I really did not ask Connie to choose this hymn, but she did, and that's great. We gather together to ask the Lord's blessing. And we really pay attention to that part of the song, don't we? Especially at Thanksgiving. We don't hear that song very often, except at Thanksgiving. We come, usually, to thank God for His blessings, and then after eating and watching inside of our eyelids in the recliner, after watching the ball game, Bill said this morning, he said, "Well, I tried to watch this. I was going to watch the Clemson game yesterday, but when I turned it, the South Carolina game was on, and then the next thing I knew, it was halftime of the Clemson game, and I just didn't know what had happened." But after we've eaten all of that and we sit down and we start watching a little television, and as I said, as one person said recently, their husband sat down and oftentimes he was checking to make sure there weren't any holes in his eyelids for the light to come in, we turn our attention to what we think we need or want for Christmas, right? In fact, you can do that earlier this year. I'm not sure what, as I said in Sunday school class, I'm not sure what they're going to start calling Thursday. It was Black Friday, but you can start the sales on Thursday afternoon now, right after you eat and take a nap. But the song doesn't start there, and the first verse doesn't stop there, and the first verse doesn't stop there. "He chastens and hastens His will to make known." Wait a minute. Let's go back to the ball game and the Christmas list and think about our blessings, right? We did bring a lot of food for the hungry in our area the day of communion, and I'm very grateful for that, and I know that they are. That was really fantastic. And quite frankly, when it comes to missions and giving and doing things, not just giving money, but doing things in local missions, I must say that y'all really are outstanding. And some of you don't do missions just at Thanksgiving and Christmas and Annie Armstrong Easter offering, but you do missions throughout the year. But sometimes churches and persons will come to special occasions They'll go through the traditions, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, and then go about their own way, thankful for the blessings, but not really taking the time to listen for God's further will, for that will to be made known to them, and the expectations. It dawned on me a while ago, and I need to check one of the older hymnals. And I know they want to have a special section for special holidays, but anybody other than me notice that all the Thanksgiving hymns are at the last part of the hymnal? I don't know if that was a Freudian slip by the people who put it together or not, and I'm not at all knocking the Thanksgiving hymns. I love them, but I think it's, I just kind of thought a while ago, it's interesting that they're all among the last songs that we sing rather than somewhere further up in the hymnal. And perhaps it struck me a while ago, perhaps that says something about a lot of the way people treat Thanksgiving to God. It's kind of an afterthought. But even more so, listening for the will of God. He chastens and hastens His will to make known. Maybe one of the latter things that we do in our lives. In fact, sometimes people who do these things almost become immune to the call of God to meet the needs of others. Sometimes they put the rites and the habits before that call to help. Well, the passage today points to the importance that Jesus placed on meeting human needs. Meeting human needs because of the traditions with God. We meet the needs because of those traditions, because of what we have experienced and what we have come to know and what we have been taught. In these verses, there are two different Sabbath days that are involved, where Jesus goes beyond the limits of the law. He goes beyond the limits of the habit. He goes beyond the limits of the tradition, where the traditions had become burdensome and actually had overlooked satisfaction of human need. In Luke 6, 1 through 5, Jesus and His disciples were crossing a grain field on the Sabbath. My guess is it was either about lunchtime or just before supper time. They were crossing the field on the Sabbath, and the disciples, who were hungry, reached out, plucked some grain to satisfy their hunger, a basic human need, which also provides nourishment. And they didn't just pluck the heads of grain. They picked them up and they went. No, they weren't trying to start a fire. But they did like this and got the husks off the grain, and then they would have done like this to let the chaff blow away, and then they could eat the grain, satisfy their hunger and their nourishment. Well, there were some Pharisees who were spying on them, probably hiding in the bushes somewhere. There were some Pharisees that came out and confronted Jesus about allowing His disciples to violate the Sabbath law. Of course, notice they didn't accuse Jesus of violating the Sabbath law, but they said, "Now, why do you let your disciples do these things? What kind of stuff are you teaching them?" By the way, there were hundreds of regulations for the Sabbath. You couldn't tie a knot or loosen a knot on the Sabbath because that was work. You could not write two letters of the alphabet together because that might form a word and that was work. You couldn't start writing anything, cutting someone's hair, applying makeup, or even nailing a board together just prior to sundown because you might accidentally do something. You might be bringing that hammer down and the sun sets and then you hit the nail and you've done work on the Sabbath. There was no reaping, no threshing, no winnowing. And guess what? Those disciples did all three of those things just in that little action of grabbing the grain, rubbing it together between their hands, and then taking the grain out from the chaff. Work! things that were forbidden. In fact, there were 39 different classes of works forbidden for the Sabbath. My grandfather wouldn't let us play on swing sets on Sunday. He took Sabbath law to Sunday because that would be breaking the law of the Sabbath to rest. Of course, after I got a little bit older, it dawned on me that he sure didn't stop my grandmother from making lunch. So we sometimes pick and choose. And these Pharisees looked at Jesus. Jesus could have gotten in a grand debate with them. But rather than do that, he went to history. Oh no, history. He went to history and used a story about King David to illustrate the overarching service to fill human need. David was actually running away from Saul when this story occurs. Saul's trying to kill him. We talked about that last week. And he and his men are actually starving. They haven't eaten in a while because they've been on the run. They haven't been able to get any food. And so David goes and he asks Ahimelech. Don't you just like those names? He asks Ahimelech, the priest, for bread. And the priest says, well, I've just swapped out the bread of the presence, the show bread at the altar. He said, but the old bread, David and his men wanted the stale bread. He said, the old bread is only for the priests because it's holy bread that's been offered to God. But David continues to ask and tells him about his starving men. And so the priest, Ahimelech, gives them the bread to satisfy their hunger, to nourish them. In other words, human need was greater than keeping the letter of the law. The Pharisees thought, how in the world can we argue with something that King David did? A precedent for satisfying hunger had been set. In fact, even more importantly than keeping the letter of the law, meeting that human need was there. And Jesus then exercised authority and said, I will tell you this, the Son of Man, that is Himself, is Lord of the Sabbath. When He did that, because God allowed David and his men and their needs to overshadow the law, Jesus was linking Himself and His actions to the purposes of God the Father in this world, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked. The next Sabbath story goes even deeper as Jesus heals a man on the Sabbath. Jesus is teaching in the synagogue on this particular Sabbath day, standing room only. As Jesus is teaching, a man who has a withered hand enters. His hand is paralyzed and has become useless. Muscles have atrophied. Now, the Sabbath had been established as a day of rest, a day of recreation, or I would submit a day of recreation, after and including the worship of God. So here they are worshiping God, who gives life and who gives healing, who gives sustenance. But the religious leaders have come not to pay attention to the worship of God. They have come this day to be watchdogs. To be watchdogs over what happened when Jesus was in the Sabbath. In fact, there are some scholars who have suggested that perhaps the religious leaders enticed the man to come in, trying to set Jesus up. Enticed him to come in, so that they could catch Jesus in wrongdoing, because they knew enough about Jesus that if he saw this man, he would not deny human need. Sabbath law said you could save a life on the Sabbath if it were in danger, but not anything that could wait. And certainly this withered hand was not going to kill the man before the next day. So Jesus looks around and he poses a question. Is it legal to do good on the Sabbath or to do evil? Is it legal to do what is good or to do evil? He throws the question of law or meeting human need right back in the faces of the Pharisees. His implication is, if I heal the man, I do good. If I don't, by neglecting him, I'm actually doing evil. I'm doing harm. Why? Because I have the means and I have the opportunity to do something to help him, to do something good. When they don't answer, which Jesus didn't expect them to answer, but when they don't answer, Jesus then heals the man, which of course makes them incredulous. And then they talk together about how they can destroy Jesus. Let me ask you a question. On what day are they talking about doing evil to destroy Jesus? On the Sabbath. On the Sabbath. Right then and there, when Jesus said, "Is it lawful to do good or to do evil?" they begin to think about doing evil. Jesus saw the human need as something about which the religious persons and the religious institution should be very concerned. By the way, before there were programs sponsored by the government to help folks in need, who was it that typically helped folks in need? Several of you said it, the church and the synagogues, the religious folks, the people who had a connection with God and recognized that God satisfies our needs, oftentimes even before we ask. In reaction to the needs around him and to how the religious leaders reacted, the text says that Jesus went and spent all night praying. I'm sure with these needs on his heart and on his mind, he prayed. I'm sure that he probably thanked God for hearing his prayer. We know on a couple of occasions he verbalized that. One of those was right before he met human need when he raised Lazarus from the dead and gave him back to his sisters. That's right. And when he said, "Father, thank you for hearing my prayer. I know that you always hear them." And thanksgiving is a major part, or should be a major part, of our individual daily prayers. So I'm sure he thanked God for hearing his prayers. I'm sure he probably thanked God for giving him the opportunity to help someone in need and prayed for the needy. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if in his prayer, Jesus even prayed for the religious leaders who needed to learn that they had a need to learn how to help those around them more than meeting their own needs and the needs of their friends. Jesus had preached earlier that he had come to bring good news to the poor, to give sight to the blind, to set the captives free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, which I would submit to you is any year, not just for the people of God, but for those who are in need. And so he prayed. And after the prayer, Jesus set apart 12 here in the Gospel of Luke. After the prayer, he set apart 12 to teach about meeting the needs of others. Later in this chapter, we find something rather interesting as well. We find something that we call the Sermon on the Plain, P-L-A-I-N, similar to the Sermon on the Mount. But rather than blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says, blessed are you poor, for you will be rich. Blessed are you who are hungry, for you will be satisfied. But he also turns the tables and says, woe to you who are rich now. Not that having means was a sin, but the misuse of it at the expense of the poor and the needy was. He sought to help to encourage the poor and the needy not to give up hope. He sought to challenge those who had opportunity to look with compassion. And Jesus burned with a fire to fill and meet the needs of others around, even yours and mine, here in the 21st century. Jesus chose 12 and set them apart. He later sent out 70 in one gospel, 72 according to another, to heal, to preach the good news, and to meet the needs. And guess what? They came back telling stories thankfully and joyfully because they had been given the opportunity to meet the needs. The mission of the church, as Jesus sent the disciples, is to make disciples. It's not just about getting them down an aisle, sprinkled, poured, or dumped and plopped in a pew. It's about making disciples. Teaching them, but first of all, teaching ourselves all of His commands. Especially those commands about meeting human need. Meeting physical need, yes. Meeting emotional need, of course. And meeting spiritual need. When we come to this time with thanksgiving, truly opening our hearts and our minds to God's Spirit, when we don't just sing about gathering together to ask the Lord's blessings, but we continue to listen as He hastens His will to make known. The wicked oppressing now cease from distressing. We have an opportunity to help overcome distress, to help overcome the wickedness of the world. And when we truly open our hearts and minds to God's Spirit, then when we gather to ask the Lord's blessing, perhaps my need is to listen. To listen as He makes that will made known. That will to help teach and to help others in growing, but also to help fill the need. And I would suggest another part of that is not only to be thankful for the blessings that I have received, but to be thankful for the blessing of having an opportunity to meet the needs. Would you join me in prayer? Our gracious God, we thank You. We thank You for so much with which You bless us. Things that we really do not deserve, and yet You are gracious. Lord, help us to not only be thankful for those things, but give us a heart of thanksgiving, not just at this time of the year, but perhaps we can start now. Thanksgiving for opportunities to see need, to meet need, and to help others as their needs are met, to then meet the needs of others around them. May our thanksgiving not be at the end of the book, but an integral part of our daily lives. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Our hymn of decision, our closing hymn, is another of those thanksgiving hymns, 788. Now thank we all our God. As we sing, I would encourage you not only to listen to the words, but to open our hearts in thankfulness for the things with which God blesses us, but especially for the ways God blesses us to meet the needs. Our altar is open for any decision that you might make. Number 788. Now thank we all our God.